The Orange FM.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I am one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I'm here with a man sent by the orb to make fire with his hands, Adam Farmer.
I'm sorry, but I love that one. That is possibly my favorite up till this point in time, and I'm sure we will talk about what in the world that even means. For those of you following along at home, if you watch these episodes, that means something to you, and it definitely means something to me at this point.
Yep, definitely. And by these episodes, in today's episode, we are going to be reviewing the classic Doctor episodes, An Unearthly Child.
Yeah, and this is where we start. This is where we jump into it. We've mentioned it a couple times leading up to this episode, but here we are. We finally arrived, and we're revisiting the classics.
Yes, and just to kind of give, you know, kind of let you guys know exactly how we're doing this so you can kind of follow along as we go with this episode and in our future episodes until Doctor Who comes back. Before, we had talked about going back and using like the Netflix library of classic Doctor Who episodes. But a very kind listener contacted us and said that Hulu Plus actually has more classic Doctor episodes than Netflix even does. And they actually have the pilot episode, which is what we're going to be reviewing tonight. And a lot of the very first episodes. So we wanted to take the opportunity to actually start at the very beginning. So we are now going to use the Hulu Plus library. So,
and taking a look at just for a reference point moving forward, taking a look at Hulu just to see how many classic Doctor Who episodes they have. And yes, they're a little bit different than what you would find on Netflix because they're about an average of 24, 25 minutes long. But at last count, there are 368 episodes of classic Doctor on Hulu.
Wow. So we will not be running out of material anytime soon. So anytime we have these big gaps in between Doctor Who seasons, we can go back to the classic Doctor and fill in those gaps with those episodes.
Definitely. Bring ourselves up to speed. And if anybody's following along at home, we'll definitely do our best to bring you up to speed on where we have come from and how we got to where we are.
So if you can afford the $7.99 a month, we would definitely recommend getting a Hulu Plus subscription. You can watch your Doctor Who episodes right on your computer or on your iPad, or if you have a smart TV, that's how I've been watching them. You know, that way you can watch them along with us and then listen to our episodes and listen to us dissect, you know, analyze, maybe even mock a little bit the classic Doctor episodes.
I'm going to try to keep the mocking to a minimum. Now, for those of you who have not watched the classic Doctors yet, I must say that in my first foray into the classic Doctor Who world, it is completely different. I was honestly surprised at how different things seem to me. Now, maybe there's a progression, and obviously we just watched the pilot episode, so maybe things change, adjust over time. But I gotta say, I was pretty surprised at how different things are today compared to what they were.
Definitely, and we will get into that eventually. But before we do start talking about those episodes, let's talk about, I guess we'll call it news, or what little news has been coming out about the current Doctor Who series. And really the only thing that we've gotten lately is some leaked set pictures, and we've also gotten some officially released set pictures of Capaldi as the Doctor. Clara has been in them. And I guess at this point we can kind of say spoiler alert. If you're very sensitive to spoilers about the, you know, series 8 that's coming up and you don't want to hear anything at all about it, we will give you that spoiler alert now. You can tune out for a few minutes and come back. But for the most part, what they've shown hasn't really been too anything that I would consider too spoilery.
Right. We don't know what the what Capaldi's outfit is going to be like, which I know is definitely one thing that everybody's waiting to see. Every doctor has an outfit, and we're still on pins and needles waiting to see what Capaldi's is going to be. But yeah, there's if you are doing your darndest to avoid being spoiled in any way possible leading up to this autumn when series 8 starts, definitely you might want to walk away, pause, fast forward, whatever the case may be.
So you're saying that Capaldi's not going to be the doctor that says pajamas are cool?
I sure hope not. I definitely hope that that outfit of the 18th century pajamas is not his outfit moving forward. I hope that's just one episode, maybe just a couple scenes that we have to put up with that one.
Yeah, so pretty much, you know, in the pictures we see him. I think Clara was in one of the pictures. We know she's still going to be the companion. And then I don't know if this was in any photos or anything, but I think some other leaked information is that the some of the characters that we've gotten to know more recently with the 11th Doctor are going to also be involved with the 12th Doctor, meaning Strax, Jenny, and Lizard Lady.
Yes, they're all returning, which I can't say that I'm too broke up about that. I've honestly enjoyed every episode that they've been into up to this point. Not still trying to piece together the stories and everything like that, but I've enjoyed every time I've seen them, especially Strax. I have a special place in my heart for Strax. So having them show up and just watching them play off of Capaldi, the new Doctor, is going to be I don't know. It's going to be a fun episode, I think.
Yeah, and I guess that's the key word, fun. I think I was kind of hoping that the tone would change from Matt Smith and that they would maybe leave some of those more goofy characters in the past. I know when Tennant became Smith, there was kind of a clean break there. Not much of what was in Tennant's world really carried over into Smith's world, with the exception of River Song, who was more of a Moffat carryover than anything else. But so I was kind of expecting maybe the same type of thing between Smith and Capaldi, that, you know, kind of Smith's companions would kind of be left in the past, and then Capaldi would have kind of a new group of people that he would be working with. But I guess not.
I think we'll get there, though, because everything, once again, so leading up to the 50th and the Christmas special, I was doing my best to stay away from every spoiler. But now that that is over, now that I've seen the regeneration, now that I know what happened to Matt Smith's doctor, I haven't been hiding anything from myself. So what I have read, not going into too much detail, it sounds like although those characters are going to be returning, there is going to be a pretty dramatic change in personality, which that might be pretty comical in that episode, but I think there's going to be a pretty stark contrast between how Matt Smith approached those characters to how Capaldi approaches those characters. So that should in and of itself add a little bit more of a dynamic to those relationships, if you will.
And didn't Moffat say something about Capaldi being like the Beast as compared to Smith being the puppy?
I haven't read that one. I wouldn't be surprised, though, based upon some of the other things I've read. So that if that is the case, that's going to be a pretty interesting comparison, especially how is that going to work out with Clara? If Smith was a puppy, Clara was the little girl that had the puppy on the leash. Now, if you strap that leash on the Beast, I wonder how that's going to turn out.
I don't know. But I think, you know, we're kind of used to the more kind and gentle Doctor. So, but we got a little bit of a taste of Mean Doctor by going back and watching the first Doctor.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe it'll be kind of a throwback to some of the, you know, to the first Doctor, where he sometimes didn't seem like he really cared that much about humans and was a little bit more of a mean character, at least in the first few episodes that I've seen him in.
Yeah, and that might be something. That might be something interesting for us to take a look at moving forward, because I think we are getting a different flavor of the Doctor as we watch some of these classic episodes. And I wonder how much of that personality We're going to find in Capaldi himself as the Doctor, be it with or without the Scottish accent, which I will continually try to reconcile in my mind how my Doctor, Tennant, was not allowed to have an accent. And yet here we go with Capaldi. It's already put a notch in his armor for me.
I don't know. Tennant seemed to slip out from time to time.
Yeah, there's the werewolf episode that we've already talked about in a previous podcast that he actually was able to use it, which I thought was great. But anyways, that's beside the point. We can leave that one lie.
And then I guess the other thing, and you know, once again, if you have tuned back in, another spoiler alert, Moffat has kind of hinted at, now he hasn't said this is going to happen for sure, but the possibility of River Song coming back,
yeah,
in the eighth series, and you know, having interaction with Capaldi. How do you feel about that? Is that something that you kind of hope that her story is done, or would you be happy to see her come back?
I am willing to go on record and say that I hope that is just a rumor and that it doesn't actually take place. As much as I enjoyed some of the interactions between Riversong and the Doctor, and as much as I enjoyed some episodes that had Riversong in it, she was never one of my top characters when it comes to Doctor Who. So to have her pop up, I've already laid her to rest in my mind. In The Name of the Doctor, where she just kind of fades out, and I considered that her end, she's already gone in my mind. So to see her crop back up, it would definitely be interesting, probably add another fun little episode and fun little twist. But I would say I'm pretty happy just to let her sit back in the library.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I liked River Song, but you know, I'm ready for her to kind of fade away and you know, maybe create some more interesting characters that we can learn more about. I think her time is done.
Yeah, I would join right in there that when you said new characters, I'm ready to see a couple new characters.
And I'm sure we'll get them. So, all right. Well, I think that's pretty much it. I mean, there's really not a lot of news coming out. This is kind of typical, you know, after one series ends, you know, there's just not a lot going on right now. I mean, the filming has started, so we'll probably continue to get, you know, set pictures and things like that. But, you know, so that's pretty much it. So let's get right into let's talk about the first Doctor. Let's talk about the classic series. Adam Farmer has finally watched the pilot episode of Doctor Who.
Not only that, I watched much more than that because kind of a peek behind the curtain of the podcast, we were all set going with Netflix like we talked about. So I had already watched the Aztec episodes, watching them all through. And I can say that I actually kind of enjoyed them. And then we kind of flipped it on its head and decided to jump on Hulu and watch from the very beginning. So I jumped back and I watched those ones as well. So I'm in the midst of classic Who, Whovian watching right now. And I can say that there is enjoyment to be found.
So you actually watched the Aztec episodes before you watched the first episode.
I did. And I can honestly, and this is what kind of surprised me at how different, even between those two stories, everything seemed. So I'm definitely looking forward to the episodes that follow the pilot episode just to see what has changed. And maybe there's a progression that takes place. But yeah, I've jumped in both feet.
The very first episode, the pilot episode, is titled An Unearthly Child. It was first broadcast on BBC November 23rd, I think. Yeah, November 23rd, 1963. So
okay,
we're talking about going back to the 60s. TV was not what it is today, and in England, it definitely wasn't what it is today. I think they're a little bit behind the times as far as their quality of television production back in the 60s. And you could definitely tell with this episode.
Yeah, And the thing that I'm finding interesting, and it's one of the things that even about the modern day episodes, especially over the past season or two, what I've really missed are those multiple episode story arcs. So I was really looking forward to having, because each of these seem like they're divided into at least four. from what I've seen, four episodes that make up an entire story. And I'm really loving that format. I kind of like how they kind of cut it off in between episodes, kind of leave you hanging. It definitely makes me want to jump directly to the next episode on Hulu so that I can get the entire story. So I like that aspect of it.
And they come in these nice 22-minute chunks. So they're pretty easy to digest, I guess you could say, although some of them are a little bit tougher. But the way that this storyline kind of, you know, the very first episode was almost like a standalone story first. And then the following three episodes were the stories about the cavemen.
Yes.
And that all seemed to be kind of one big story. But the pilot episode, I thought, out of the four, was the most interesting by far. You know, you get to meet the doctor for the first time, his very first companions, you know, all these things that we kind of take for granted now as like what the doctor is. You know, he has a TARDIS, he has companions.
Right.
You know, but we got to meet the first, you know, the very first version of the TARDIS, the very, you know, the first console and all of that stuff, you know, the first companion. You know, he has his granddaughter who is his companion, but then right in that very first episode, he adds two more companions. So he has three companions right there in the very first episode.
But we need to kind of take a step back, because I don't know if watching the episode, if we could say that he honestly intended to add two more companions, which I thought was kind of hilarious, just how he ends up with Ian Chesterton and Barbara Wright as his companions, along with Susan. They kind of just force their way in there, and then he kind of just takes off without letting them out, which I thought was pretty amusing.
Yeah, and I actually really enjoyed that part of the story. I thought that was kind of a cool way to kick things off. You know, he was unwillingly bringing these people along with him, where now in the modern series, it's almost like he seeks out companions.
Yeah.
So it was kind of interesting to see the very first doctor wasn't looking for companions. They happened upon him, and, you know, it was, in a way, he was kind of forced to bring them along with him.
Yeah. And
he kind of held them prisoner. And we were kind of, you know, talking a little bit earlier about mean doctor. And he definitely wasn't the kind, gentle, you know, loving doctor that we know. He was kind of a jerk for most of it.
Don't be confused by him being called grandpa so often, or grandfather so often, by Susan. He definitely isn't your kindly old grandfather who willingly allows people into his TARDIS and gives them cookies. He holds them captive and mocks them the entire time.
The point is not whether you understand. What is going to happen to you?
Sir, tell everybody about the ship now.
Ship?
Yes, ship. This doesn't roll along on wheels, you know.
You mean it moves?
The TARDIS can go anywhere.
TARDIS? I don't understand you, Susan.
Well, I made up the name TARDIS from the initials, time and relative dimension in space. I thought you'd both understand when you saw the different dimensions inside from those outside.
Let me get this straight. A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard, it can move anywhere in time and space?
Yes.
Quite so.
But that's ridiculous.
Why won't they believe us?
Well, how can we?
Now, don't get exasperated, Susan. Remember the Red Indian. When he saw the first steam train, his savage mind thought it an illusion, too.
You're treating us like children.
Am I? The children of my civilization would be insulted.
Your civilization?
Yes, my civilization. I tolerate this century, but I don't enjoy it.
So did you know that the doctor's original companion was a relative of his?
That is something that honestly has always troubled, is probably too strong of a word, always caused some confusion, because I have known that first companion, Susan, young girl, called the doctor grandfather. I still don't quite get that relationship. That one still doesn't make sense in my mind. I know that Tennant in one of the episodes talks a little bit about, or at least refers to, a family that he's had in Doctor's Daughter, the episode The Doctor's Daughter. So I always knew that there was probably some relationships there that were lingering, but I still don't understand the idea of a granddaughter. Part of me just wants to say that's just a fun title that she calls the old man that she has started to travel with.
Yeah, I think it's still kind of a point of contention among Doctor Who fans if she really is his granddaughter or not. And I think I did a little bit of looking into it. You know, I haven't read any of the novels or anything like that, but apparently in some of the novels, You know, in one novel, it says that she is his biological granddaughter. And then another one, it says she's not. So I think even within its own lore, it hasn't really been nailed down if she really was his granddaughter.
Gotcha.
And even like her age, like she says she's 15. You know, even that has been a point of contention, you know, that she actually was much older than that. And that was just part of her cover, was that she was young and 15.
Which is definitely another interesting aspect of the story, because when Ian and Barbara burst into the TARDIS, it's really funny just to hear what the Doctor is talking about, because he's honestly acting like they were spies, or they're in witness protection program where their cover is blown and now we have to go somewhere else. This is why we can't stay in one place for very long. It's just, I thought that was a pretty interesting way to look at it, because usually it's just the Doctor flying here, there, and everywhere at his own whim or wherever the TARDIS takes him. But it looks like they set it up like he was actually hiding from something, like he was trying to maintain a cover for a good bit.
Yeah, and I guess at this point he's kind of on the run, like he has stolen the TARDIS from Gallifrey and he's on the run. So I guess that would kind of make sense.
Right. We've already talked about them getting to the TARDIS, but what are your thoughts on Ian and Barbara, just from the first pilot episode or even throughout the other episodes that we are going to talk just a little bit more about? But let's just go with initial impressions from the pilot episode. First gut reaction about Ian and Barbara.
I think I've watched these episodes quite a few times now, just from different times that I've tried to start watching through the classic series. So I think I've watched them at least 4 or 5 times each. So I think my very first reaction when I first watched these episodes was I didn't really like these characters. And I don't know if it was because of the characters or just because of how bad the acting was sometimes. But I think now that I've watched the episodes a number of times, the characters have started to grow on me. I actually really enjoy Ian as a character. And I think he has an awesome name, Ian Chesterton.
Yes.
But Barbara, she, you know, she's interesting. I don't really like her as much. And then Susan, I really can't stand.
What is it about Susan that you can't stand?
Well, she's a teenager. So no offense to any of you teenage listeners. But yeah, she just, it's this constant whine. And like, and I don't know how, maybe the 60s were different, but it just seems like the way that they portray these women, you know, Susan and Barbara both, it's like they're helpless. And then Ian and the Doctor are the ones that kind of get them out of the mess.
Now, so I'm going to jump in here real quick just to stick up for him, because if I remember correctly, as we go through the episodes, it is at one point that both Ian and the Doctor, well, along with Susan and Barbara, are cowering in the weeds when Za is mauled by some animal off in the distance, which I'm sure we'll cover part of that at some point. But it's Barbara who bursts out of the weeds first to help. So definitely, I can definitely get what you're saying as far as being somewhat helpless, but there's definitely certain parts where she is taking a lead at some point and kind of driving forward to do whatever she thinks is right in that situation.
Yeah, and I think that's the only example that you could give about her taking any sort of leadership, at least in these initial episodes. You know, right. I know I've seen the Aztec episodes as well, and I know there's other stuff. You know, her character definitely changes, but I guess we have to give her a pass considering that she has just been whisked away from her middle school and is now, you know, thrown back into the caveman times and is watching, you know, people die and stuff like that. So
I thought it was interesting just in the start when they land back in whatever, I believe he says the TARDIS says it's zero, and he says it must be broke. But when they land and the door opens for the first time, and Barbara just kind of takes it in stride. She's just like, okay, I have no other choice but to believe that this is taking place. And yet Ian's the one who's going back and forth and being like, no, this can't be right. And The doctor says, do you have to feel the alien soil and hear the call of the alien birds? And he's like, yes, I do. But yeah, Barbara's the one that's just like, oh yeah, I have really no other option but to believe that this is actually happening. But Ian's all stumbling and falling over because he can't wrap his mind around it.
That just means she's more gullible. No, but yeah, it is true. Ian was definitely the skeptic, and it took quite a while for him to be convinced. But and I probably would have been the same way.
Yeah, you know? But definitely. So they pick up from 1963 in England, and they drop down, like we said already, in caveman times, whenever that might be. Either it's 100,000 BC or it's just zero, whatever the case may be. And there they are on the planet. What did you think about the doctor having to go on his observation journey out of the TARDIS to collect samples with his Geiger counter?
Well, before we even get there, I was confused as to why the time travel seemed to knock out the companions.
Yeah, why
did they pass out? I mean, we've never seen that happen before. With when the doctor travels and through time, you know, they just go wherever they go and everybody's fine. But I guess maybe he didn't have the TARDIS calibrated correctly at this point, and humans couldn't handle the time travel.
Yeah, I was confused by that one too, because it even seemed like it dazed the doctor. Like, the doctor didn't expect what happened to happen. And of course, being it the 60s, they did the whole psychedelic TV screen on you. So I kind of felt a little bit woozy after that. So maybe that's all that it took to knock the companions out. But yeah, we get done traveling, and all of a sudden all the companions are just passed out on the floor or in a wood chair, which just so happens to be in the TARDIS along with a wood statue of an eagle, which I thought was amazing. Videography right there. But anyways, yeah, I have no idea why the time travel knocked the companions out entirely.
Yeah, so I don't know why the doctor was going out. Did he say he was going out to collect rock samples?
Yeah, he was just trying to figure out where they were.
Oh, okay. So he didn't even know where in time they were.
That is how I took it, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it was kind of cool that we get the first instance of somebody saying the words Doctor Who, you know, when Ian said, you know, he says something about him being named Dr. Foreman.
Yes.
And then he's like, and then I guess he's corrected that that's not really the doctor's name. And then he says Doctor Who.
Oh, look, I don't understand it any more than you do. The inside of the ship, suddenly finding ourselves here. Even some of the things Dr. Foreman says.
That's not his name. Who is he? Doctor Who? Perhaps if we knew his name, we might have a clue to all this.
So we got that. We got that, you know, we hear that all throughout the modern series, everybody doing the whole Doctor Who, you know. So it's, yes, it's a common gag. So we know that that came from the second episode ever of Doctor Who. But the thing we haven't heard yet is it's bigger on the inside. That is
right.
I'm curious to see. I mean, we had the whole thing where Ian was like, no, I walked around it and it was small, you know, but nobody ever said it's bigger on the inside. So right. I'm very curious to see what the first instance of that is going to be.
And we have the very first instance of the police box being called the TARDIS.
Yes, which Susan claims she's the one that named it the TARDIS.
Yeah, because of what the TARDIS does. It's just that one threw me off. I wasn't expecting that at all, and I'm still trying to process how that fits into the big grand scheme of things.
Yeah, and I think that might even be something that has been retconned at this point. You know, at some other point during the series, I think maybe they maybe have retconned the fact that she's the one that called it the TARDIS.
Yeah.
But we don't know. I guess we'll find out as we... I'm trying to, like, live in this weird zone of trying to research about this stuff without spoiling myself, because I do want to be surprised as I'm going through the classic series with things that happen. And, you know, I don't know a lot of these characters' fates and things like that. So I'm trying to walk that line of doing a little bit of research without spoiling myself too much.
Gotcha. I'm just taking it as it comes. I'll ask the questions and I'll expect you to give me the answers. How about that?
Well, or at least the internet can give you the answers.
Works for me.
So we find out that they are somewhere in the prehistoric times, and there are these cavemen there, and this group of cavemen are obsessed with making fire. And so I guess the doctor, was he lighting a pipe or something?
He was lighting a pipe, which I thought was pretty darn cool to see the doctor bust out a pipe while he's collecting soil samples, which the caveman by the name of Cal noticed that he had fire.
Yes.
Which is where the entire story goes from there.
Yep. And they take the doctor back. They want him to, because obviously in caveman times, he who has fire is the man who has the power.
Yes. The leader has fire. The orb gives leader fire, or gives leader fire, or man fire, and he is leader.
Yes, exactly. I think that was word for word what they said.
About 10 times plus.
And this is kind of the point where the show starts to go downhill. I was very interested in the first episode and, you know, how they met the doctor and traveling through time for the first time with the companions. But once they meet these cavemen, the story doesn't really go much further than that. It's as simple as saying that they're fighting over who's going to make fire. They capture the companions and the doctor. They lock them up in a cave of skulls. And then, like, an old lady dies, and then they get away. That's pretty much it. I think Cal dies, too. Or no, yeah.
Yes, he does. That is an awesome couple sentence summary of what just took place in this four episode story arc.
Yes, it took them 3 episodes to go back and forth about who was going to make fire, and I literally was getting angry as they're arguing about it, because it just kept going back and forth. Cal, make fire.
No, Zah, make fire.
Cal, make fire.
Zah, make fire, because Zah, the leader.
And yes. Then the girl that I guess was supposed to be Zah's girlfriend.
Yeah, whose name was Horg.
Horg? Holy cow, that's a horrible name.
I believe, if I'm remembering, maybe that was her dad. Someone was named Horg, because it was in the credits.
Oh, I have to Wikipedia this.
Yes, do
okay,
so.
I see Zah in her, or H-U-R, so maybe whore. Whore. Yeah, so I'm hoping it's pronounced her. And then old mother, Cal, and then you're right. There is a character named Horg.
Yes. And that, and I believe think that's her dad.
Her dad that looks like Will Ferrell. Didn't you? I mean, as soon as the guy showed up on screen, he's taller, like a foot taller than all the other cavemen. And he looks exactly like Will Ferrell looks in like the SNL skit where he's always in the hot tub with his wife. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No. But I can't stop laughing now.
Anyone that watches SNL knows what I'm talking about. He's, you know, he always calls his wife Lova, and like they're in the hot tub and he's all hairy and he looks like a caveman. And that's what this guy looked like, this Horg guy. He looked like Will Ferrell, and I couldn't get it out of my head. The whole time I was watching the episode, I kept laughing every time that guy would come on screen.
Well, one thing that I was so impressed by was how amazing, even in caveman speech, how amazing their British accent was. I was expecting one of them to bust out in Shakespeare at any point in time. It just seemed so classy of cavemen.
Well, I think
episode.
Horg was doing Shakespeare. That actor definitely was. He was stage trained. He was delivering like he was in a Shakespeare play.
He definitely had the poise and the posture to deliver Shakespeare in this episode.
And apparently the actor's name is Howard Lang. So props to you, Howard. I don't know if you're still alive, but props to you. You did a bang up job.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's just got me going now. I can't get that visual out of my mind.
Of Will Ferrell?
Of Will Ferrell. Yeah. Every time I'm thinking back through the episode, I'm seeing Will Ferrell now.
If they ever remake this episode, they have to have Will Ferrell play that part.
I think we now know what we need to do. We need to write Moffin and ask him to remake this episode. One thing that we can't get away from, because before they meet the cavemen, they all realize that the TARDIS did not change.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah, I guess this is the you know, the TARDIS, we all know that the TARDIS is stuck in its form as a police box. We've known that, but this is, I guess, the first time that that happens, because when they land, Susan turns around and says, it didn't change.
Yeah. And it she even explains it that in the past, it's become an iconic or an ionic column or a sedan chair, which I just think is absolutely hilarious. But yeah, it stayed as a police box because once again, they were in 1963. So they still had those back then.
Yeah. The iconic blue police box was the, you know, this is the first time that it's been stuck at that, and it's been stuck ever since, which I think the Doctor is probably to the point now that even if he could get that fixed, he probably wouldn't.
Yeah. And in fact, doesn't he have that conversation in the modern series with Donna at some point? For some reason, I feel like that there was a conversation about why he didn't fix it. Like when they were in Rome with the that volcano that erupted Mount Vesuvius. Anyways,
maybe I don't remember specifically, but and I do remember because the TARDIS does make the exact same sound that it's that we know it makes now.
Yes.
And that's also been referenced in the modern series, how River basically calls out the Doctor and says that he's just flying it wrong and that he forgot, isn't it, he forgot to take off the parking brake or
yes.
something.
Yes. Yep. The wheeze.
So even all the way back with the first Doctor, it had the exact same sound, which it's cool to see that they kept some of these elements that they easily could have, you know, changed with the modern series, that they kept some of these basic elements. I think that's important.
Yeah.
And, you know, I enjoy being able to go back and have those familiar sounds and things and, you know, that puts you back into the world of the Doctor and realize, you know, this is the same character. Although it's completely different, a completely different feel, you know, it is still the Doctor.
Yeah. It there's something to be said that here we just celebrated the 50th anniversary, and yet we can go back to the episode that was filmed in 1963 and still feel like, although there are definite elements that are different, although the character's personality has changed dramatically over the years, it's still the Doctor one way or the other.
And he did have like one moment, I think, in the episode where he was very Doctor-like. And he said he gave some kind of little mini speech about hope. Do you remember that?
Yes, where fear is always with us, but so is its companion. Now, what is it called? Hope.
Yes.
Yes.
And that was very, you know, that was very Doctor-like. I thought, okay, there's the, you know, we all know the Doctor can give these elaborate speeches, and we all have our favorites that we watch on YouTube. But, you know, you can see kind of the beginnings of that where he has this inspirational little thing among all of his being mean and trying to leave the companions behind and, you know, letting Ian shock himself on purpose, you know, all of this cruelty that he, you know, he displays through all that, he still has this moment of, oh yeah, that is, you know, that's the Doctor. That's something the Doctor would say.
Yes. And another instance that was very, very Doctor to me, if you will, was when they come back and, okay, so the cavemen, Cal is fighting with Zah over who's going to be the leader of the caveman tribe. And Cal says that Zah killed the old lady. And he said, look at his knife. He killed her with his knife. And the Doctor's like, there's no blood on that knife. And Cal is like, oh, it's a bad knife. It doesn't show what it's done. And then the Doctor's like, well, you have a bad knife too. And he's like, no, I have a good knife. And he pulls it out. And then the Doctor basically tricks him into exposing himself as the killer of the old woman. And then the Doctor basically organizes the entire tribe to run out Cal from among them and throwing rocks and all sorts of stuff. It was a funny moment, but it was very Doctor-esque as well, where he basically gets the upper hand and he controls the situation and gets the outcome that he wants. I thought that was very much of the Doctor, at least the Doctor that we've come to know.
Yes, I agree. That moment stuck out to me as being very, you know, very familiar of how the Doctor acts and how he'll manipulate a situation to kind of get them out of get them out of trouble.
Yes. So overall, thinking about kind of the Doctor's relationship with the companions, what were your thoughts on this? Because that's something that kind of threw me off the entire time. Or even the emphasis placed on the companions throughout the episode.
Well, one thing that stuck out to me was we're used to the Doctor being the star.
Yeah.
And the Doctor being in charge. You know, we're not, there's the occasional, you know, companion that will question the doctor, but not the way that Ian was questioning the doctor. And Ian was, you know, basically taking charge throughout much of the episodes, not really listening to the doctor. There was none of this, like, starry-eyed looking up to this character of the doctor as this, like, this amazing person. Like, that's pretty much the reaction we get from the companions in the modern series.
Yeah.
You know, they adore the doctor. They love the doctor, you know, pretty much from the get-go.
And they count on the doctor to help them in situations.
But in these episodes, it was so different. And the doctor, like I was saying before, he was ready to leave them, you know. He was ready to leave them on the caveman, you know, time and leave with Susan and just leave them behind. He was definitely not being compassionate, and Ian was not having it either. So he was standing up to him. There was a lot of strife between the two characters. So, yeah, it definitely wasn't what I'm used to seeing, and kind of surprising.
Yeah, completely agreed. It definitely seems like throughout these four episodes, the companions were more of a focus. Like, it's definitely more of a focus on Susan and Ian and Barbara. And then the doctor's kind of just like, he's there. He's the one that enables them to have the adventure, but he's not necessarily the one that's fully taking part in what's going on. And then you're definitely right that there were a few instances in the episode, one where they're fleeing from Zah and they're in the woods and Ian's like, you take the lead, I'll walk behind. And the doctor's like, I don't have to listen to what you're saying. You're not in charge. And Ian's like, well, it doesn't matter who's in charge or not. We just need to do it this way. And then when they're in the cave and Zah asks who's the leader of the tribe, and Ian kind of just points to the doctor and says he's in charge. But it was just definitely an interesting dynamic where, yes, it could be because it's the first episode. But Ian definitely is not looking at the doctor and expecting anything out of the doctor. And it doesn't seem like the doctor's willing to give anything more than what he absolutely has to in any situation. He's just kind of there and doesn't really like the pestering that's taking place because he's ended up with two extra people than what he's planned on.
Yeah, he's definitely still wary of having these people with him. And I think it's kind of cool, though, because it shows a progression in the character. You know, the doctor that we know now, the 11th version that we've known for the past however many years, is a completely different character. You know, he's hundreds and hundreds of years older now and has been traveling with humans for a very long time. So his feeling about the human race is so much different.
Yeah, and he can't live without companions. Like, he goes from companion to companion because he always needs someone with him.
Yeah, so I think this is just the beginning of that. You know, and at this point, he still doesn't trust them, and he still thinks they're a nuisance, and they're going to kind of mess up his plans. And I think as the series goes on, I'm assuming that we're going to see him more and more kind of grow to actually appreciate them as companions.
Yeah, it's definitely in the end, at the end of the four episodes, although the cavemen were laughable, the dialogue was absolutely hilarious. And honestly, the story in and of itself was very basic and probably could be written on one page, or like you did, sum it up in a few sentences. It definitely was fun to see the doctor and kind of get that sense of this is where it all starts, and being able to kind of dream, since I don't know what's in between now and what I already know, or that episode and what I already know, kind of dream of what's going to happen as we move forward.
Well, I will say this. I've watched quite a few more episodes of this version of the doctor, and there are some more episodes that are pretty good, and there's some that are worse than these. So so you have a lot to look forward to.
Yes, I am rip-roaring ready to go. I'm ready to do this. We need to watch a couple more episodes and then record again right away.
I don't know about that, but I think the next episodes actually feature the Daleks.
Yes,
which will be interesting because, you know, the Daleks, I think for the most part, people would consider them to be the Doctor's number one nemesis. So it'll be interesting to see kind of the first versions of the Daleks and how much they've changed to what we know now. So I think I did watch these episodes a while back, so I kind of remember them, but I'll be interested to kind of revisit them and remind myself of exactly how much different they were or how much similar they were.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it because I know that the Daleks that I know have changed quite a bit since the first one. So it's going to be fun to see the same form to a point and then just the difference in how they move and how they interact.
So before we wrap up this discussion, unless you had anything else you wanted to talk about from the episodes themselves.
No, there is nothing that warrants discussion. There's definitely a few things here and there that I find amusing from the episode, but
all right, we'll point them out. What are a couple other things you noticed? We'll wrap up, but give us kind of a rundown of things that we didn't get to talk about that stuck out to you.
The one thing that stuck out to me was Susan mentioning the decimal system in the classroom, and actually Barbara and Ian were kind of laughing at her. How could she not know that? But then her making the comment that England hasn't transitioned to the U.S. decimal system yet. I thought that was amusing, considering it was 1963 when the episode was filmed. The fact that you basically can hear everything through the TARDIS wall or through the TARDIS door and how thin it was, it just seemed like they basically could hold conversations through the TARDIS from the outside to the inside, no issue whatsoever. There was a really amusing part in the in one of the episodes where basically all the cavemen children are like yelling kill, kill, kill and beating someone underneath an animal skin, which I guess they were just trying to learn how to hunt. But it was, I found it terribly amusing to watch them as they beat on each other.
Well, you bring that up, and I'll bring this up. The way that they filmed certain scenes, I found very comical, in especially the scenes that something was dying or someone was dying. two scenes specifically I'm thinking of is when was his name Zar?
Zar.
Yeah. So he's getting attacked by that beast.
Yes.
And it's like it'll flash to like the face, you know, zoom in on the doctor's face, and then he cringes, and then it zooms in on Susan's face, and she cringes, and then and it just kept going back and forth. And then also when Cal and Za were fighting, they did the exact same effect, you know, like, and then Za kills Cal, the rock, which was actually pretty violent, but that effect where they're just zooming in on the face and then the face cringes, like, I just thought, I wonder if this is something that they came up with for this show specifically, or is this a common effect that they used in the 60s? I don't know. It was comical. I laughed.
Yes, where they're fighting the camera, essentially.
Yeah.
Like the camera's attacking them, and we get to witness everything.
And then the other thing, too, the scene where they're running through the jungle, and it's kind of the same idea. Like the camera's just zoomed right up on their face, and then you just see the branches kind of slapping on the side of their face. That exact same effect was used in Lost.
Really?
And I remember J.J. Abrams explaining, you know, that effect and kind of how, you know, if you hold the camera still and put it really up close to the actor's face, and then you can make it seem like they're running. And like he was kind of, you know, going through, it was a behind the scenes featurette thing that I was watching on the DVDs. And so as soon as I saw them doing that in Doctor Who, I was like, oh, they were using that technique way before J.J. Abrams.
Nice. Yes, I'm sure it's improved a little bit since J.J. Abrams, and he probably added a few lighting effects to it as well.
Yeah, J.J. Abrams' version was much more believable. I will admit that.
I would sure hope so. Another thing that stuck out to me was how the doctor was getting tired as they were running through the woods, and he basically has to stop and catch his breath, and he can't go on any further, and it's basically up to Ian to convince him that they need to keep moving, and then Ian just gives in and says, okay, we'll just wait.
It kind of portrays the doctor as being weak, which is another thing that we're not used to.
But
I think it is interesting though, because this doctor, I believe, and spoiler alert, I believe he does die of old age. Like he doesn't actually have any kind of major event that kills him.
Oh really?
Yeah, so
oh wow.
So it kind of makes sense that, you know, they're kind of showing him with this, you know, he's aging and he is tired when he runs and stuff. So although he is the doctor for quite a while, quite a few episodes, I think he does eventually die of old age.
Huh. Wow.
That or just I guess kind of regenerate of old age, maybe be the better way of putting it.
That kind of puts a damper on it now, doesn't it?
You need to watch the An Adventure in Space and Time, that documentary. Now that you've seen these episodes, you will love that movie now. I guarantee it.
I wanted to try to snag that before tonight's episode, but I'll try to snag it before the next one. And then two inspirational statements given by one by Ian and one by the caveman at the end, where Ian says, remember, Cal is not stronger than the tribe. And that basically strikes Zah, and it's stuck in his mind now as he moves forward. And then Zah telling the woman that leaders need to have things to remember, and he was going to go talk to Ian so that he could have more things to remember. Two very like just out of place statements, but I thought were pretty cool to have just thrown in there. That's just me though. Okay, that does it for all the random points that I thought were funny or that I wanted to draw out.
Cool. Well, I kind of agree with you. The experience of watching these episodes definitely was enjoyable, more as an education than entertainment. But I did really enjoy the first episode. The caveman stuff I could have done without, but I am, you know, really excited about going forward and watching more of the first Doctor and, you know, kind of seeing these next episodes, especially with the Daleks. But there are a couple of things that I thought were interesting. Is the timing of the episode being released was actually the same time as John F. Kennedy was assassinated.
Really? Wow.
So, yeah. So because of that, I think it hurt the ratings for the first episode because obviously everybody was focused on, you know, what just happened to the United States president.
Huh.
Now, I don't know if it happened on the exact same day. I think it might have. But I know it was like either the day before or the day after. So
that's crazy.
I thought that was interesting.
I didn't know that. Now I'm looking up the dates.
Yeah, because the thing I'm seeing here, it says the launch of Doctor Who was overshadowed by the assassination of John F. Kennedy the previous day. Okay, so it happened the day before.
Ah, yeah, that would have a tendency to overshadow it.
But they still had 6 million viewers for their first episode.
I'm very surprised by that.
Which is pretty amazing, actually.
Yeah.
So, and obviously the show became a hit. They, you know, and like I said, watch the Adventures in Space and Time. They kind of go through that stuff as well and explain, you know, the popularity of it and how it kind of took off and stuff. So it's, if anybody out there hasn't seen that, you know, kind of docudrama, I would definitely recommend it. And I would recommend watching these episodes even before watching that docudrama. You'll get a lot more out of it.
For everybody who's following along with us at home as we adventure through the classic Who episodes.
I thought you were going to say adventure through space and time.
Oh, I missed my opportunity.
That would have been perfect.
That would have been awesome. I'm sorry.
So I think we've spent enough time talking about these first four episodes.
Yeah, I would say that we've covered the highlights and didn't need to go line by line through the entire story since it was so simple.
It was. But even a caveman could do it.
We nailed one.
You set me up for that one. Okay. People are already like ending the podcast now. They're like, okay, all right.
Yeah, all that's going to follow are cheesy jokes.
All right, but thanks for tuning into this episode. If you're going along with us on our journey, going back through the classic Doctors, we really appreciate you doing that. Give us some feedback. You know, what did you think about these episodes? Did you watch them? You know, shoot us an email, badwolfpodcast@gmail.com, and let us know what you thought about the episodes, about our discussion of the episodes, and if you know, we might even read your email on our next episode if you have something interesting to say. You can also leave us a review on iTunes. Go over to iTunes, look us up, Bad Wolf Radio, a Doctor Who podcast. That's our full show name. So if you search that in iTunes, you'll find the right one. And you can leave us a review over there, hopefully a good review. And you can also follow us on Twitter @BadWolfPodcast or Facebook, search Bad Wolf Radio. You'll find us. We have quite a few likes now on Facebook. We have a pretty good community growing over there. I think we have over 700 people now like our page. So we'd love for you to join in the conversation. We try to, you know, post some cool stuff over there, you know, keep up with the different news items that are coming out, but also just cool artwork that we find or anything else like that. So go over to Facebook, check us out, and leave some comments and talk to us. Me and Adam are both on over there, so you can actually get on there, and we definitely will talk back to you if you talk to us.
Yeah, and major props to those of you who are already jumping on that and even passing along little hints. We wouldn't have known about the library of Doctor Who episodes on Hulu Plus if it wasn't for someone reaching out to us actually on Twitter first, which was greatly appreciated. So yeah, keep in touch and let us know any pieces of information that you come across. We'd love to have those to discuss on later episodes.
All right, well, that's it for tonight. Everybody have a great night.
Great day.
Great day? What's the thing that you say?
Later days.
Later days. I was waiting for it. I was kind of like, aww, trying to, I was like, everybody have a great night. And then you were supposed to go,
later days.
Later days.
Perfect sense. Later days, y'all.